From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. On today's show, we're going to discuss how, on the heels of the Supreme Court's landmark ruling last week to redefine sex to include transgenderism, a new lawsuit would force doctors to perform gender transition surgeries against their medical judgment, and the United States Senate once again rejects Democrat senators' attempts to pass the Equality Act that's really not about equality. We'll also discuss the ensuing fight to save Title IX and girls' sports that's currently taking place across the country and here in Nebraska. But first, I have to start today's program with this. Planned Parenthood, America's number one abortion provider, recently came out and endorsed Joe Biden for president. And this, of course, isn't surprising. But what was surprising was the way in which they chose to qualify their endorsement of Joe Biden, who supports abortion and taxpayer funding of abortion, by saying in their endorsement, quote, "This is a life or death election." And there's just an incredible amount of irony in that statement, because while that is true, they have it completely backwards. The Planned Parenthood abortion chain, again, the number one abortion provider in our country, is responsible for ending the lives of hundreds of thousands of babies in abortion. And they have said that they will support Joe Biden for president and plan to spend millions of dollars backing him over President Trump. And Alexis McGill Johnson, the acting president of Planned Parenthood, their previous president was fired, if you remember, earlier in the year, fired by Planned Parenthood for wanting to prioritize and put more of an emphasis on actual health care and focus less on abortion and politics. And she was fired. So now their acting president came out with this statement saying, quote, "This is literally a life and death election." And that's correct, but for the wrong reasons. For the more than 345,000 unborn babies Planned Parenthood killed in 2019, it indeed is a life or death decision. And although Joe Biden supports abortion rights and supports forcing Americans to pay for abortions, polling data is clear that Americans oppose abortion funding. A January 2019 poll conducted by Marist University found that an overwhelming majority of Americans support restrictions on abortion and would like to see Roe v. Wade reinterpreted to allow further restrictions. It also found that 75% of Americans oppose taxpayer funding of abortion abroad. And by a double-digit margin, a majority of all Americans oppose any taxpayer funding of abortion. And while Planned Parenthood is endorsing Joe Biden, last week, President Trump issued a new executive order to help protect vulnerable children. The executive order aims to help protect children by strengthening child welfare programs across the country through the Department of Health and Human Services. Its aim is to improve partnerships, resources, and oversight. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar said in a statement that the president's executive order lays out bold reforms for our work with states, communities, and faith-based partners to build a brighter future for American kids who are in foster care or in crisis. According to reports, about 430,000 children are in the foster care system, and roughly 124,000 of those children are waiting for adoption. Sadly, each year there are about 20,000 children who age out of the foster care system without the support of a loving, permanent family. This new executive order is designed to address these issues and ensure that children are given the stability and support they need to flourish. The executive order takes new steps to help create robust partnerships between state agencies and public, private, faith-based, and community organizations, and will provide support and resources for caregivers. Finally, the executive order will also help improve federal oversight over key statutory child welfare requirements. And this is something that should be celebrated because all children deserve to grow up in a loving and supportive home. But tragically, that isn't always the case, and this new executive order is poised to help protect children and either transition them back into a more stable home environment or be adopted into a loving family. So this is a great step forward, and last week we talked about a major step backwards for our country that was delivered from the United States Supreme Court and their decision to redefine sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. And one of the many concerns with this ruling is that we are now faced with many more lawsuits that will be coming down the pipe that seek to undermine religious freedom, free speech, conscience rights, and the safety and privacy of women and girls. And unfortunately, we're already seeing that. It didn't take long at all. The ink is barely dry on the Supreme Court's landmark ruling in the Bostock case, which redefined the word sex under the 1964 Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation and transgenderism. And on the heels of that decision, LGBT activists have already filed a new lawsuit asking the courts to go even further by striking down a conscience rule that was issued by the Department of Health and Human Services that protects the rights of doctors. And their goal with this new lawsuit is to force religious hospitals, doctors, and other healthcare providers to perform gender transition surgeries. And if this lawsuit is successful, medical professionals and clinics would also be forced to provide puberty blockers for children and opposite sex hormones for those struggling with gender dysphoria, even if it goes against those doctors' professional judgment. And this goes back to 2016 when the Obama administration took it upon themselves to redefine sex under the Affordable Care Act and through regulations in the Department of Health and Human Services. They redefined sex to also include gender identity and termination of pregnancy, which is a euphemism for abortion. The net effect of that rule would be to remove objections to performing procedures that violated healthcare providers' consciences. And under the Trump administration, there was a new rule put in place that had just been finalized to return that definition of sex to what it's commonly understood to mean and to not include transgenderism or abortion rights. But this new rule that was finalized happened just before the Supreme Court came out with their new ruling to redefine sex. And so now we have this new lawsuit where they are wanting to take the same reasoning from the Supreme Court's decision that dealt with federal employment non-discrimination law and say that it necessarily must apply to the healthcare field as well. And they've also made it very clear that they are targeting the religious beliefs of the healthcare providers that are protected under the rule from the Trump administration. So in other words, it's directly targeting Christian doctors and faith-based hospitals and trying to force them to not only violate their conscience and their religious freedom rights, but also to violate their best medical judgment. The goal of this lawsuit is to effectively kill any religious or medical conscience as a valid objection in the healthcare field when it comes to performing otherwise unnecessary or objectionable procedures or treatments, including on young children. And so the plaintiffs who brought this lawsuit allege that LGBT individuals will be refused medical care on a massive scale if this rule is permitted to continue. And of course, that is just completely false, and it certainly is not the reality. Christian doctors and faith-based hospitals provide loving care to all people. The objection of medical providers is not serving people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. It's because they object to performing a certain procedure. if a surgeon refuses to perform a chemical or surgical castration on a teenager, that ought to be an individual doctor's prerogative under any reasonable understanding of medical or religious conscience. Or if they refuse or don't want to have to be forced to provide an abortion because they believe it's wrong and not their role as a doctor and as a healer to end the life of an innocent human being. So this is the path that we're headed down right now as a country, and we're going to see a lot more of these cases popping up as a result of the Supreme Court's decision. And further proving once again why the Supreme Court was wrong to encroach upon Congress's lawmaking duties with their decision, Senate conservatives this past week rejected the latest attempt by Senate Democrats to bring the misnamed Equality Act up for a vote when they tried to get it passed through the United States Senate under unanimous consent, which means there's no debate that takes place. All 45 Democrats wrote a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell requesting that he bring the bill up for a vote. And Republican Senators Mike Lee of Utah, James Lankford of Oklahoma, and Josh Hawley of Missouri objected. And this Equality Act, keep in mind, has nothing to do with equality. If passed, it would elevate homosexuality and transgenderism to a special status to which religious freedom and other First Amendment constitutional rights, as well as women's rights, would be subjugated. And again, like we talked about last week in the Supreme Court's Bostock decision, Justice Alito noted in his dissenting opinion that the court's majority opinion was legislating from the bench, and that Congress had considered and rejected adding sexual orientation and gender identity to federal civil rights laws. And once again, Congress just acted and rejected another attempt to use the word sex to promote another agenda entirely. So while many people were hailing this decision from the Supreme Court as a victory, LGBT activists want more. And they want more at the expense of people of faith, of women, of children, and even preborn babies. So under the, again, misleadingly named Equality Act, this bill would completely nullify the Religious Freedom Restoration Act so that people of faith cannot raise an objection to a government law regarding homosexuality or gender identity that infringes on their religious freedom or free speech rights. Single-sex facilities such as dressing rooms, showers, and restrooms would be open to anyone who believes or identifies or claims to be of the opposite sex. Businesses would be forced to support events and ideas that they disagree with. Shelters for women who have suffered emotional and physical abuse from men would be open to biological men who believe they are women. Faith-based foster care and adoption agencies that place children with a mother and father would be forced to place children in homes that go against their beliefs or be forced to shut down. Medical providers could be forced to violate their beliefs and provide drugs and hormones and surgeries that goes against their conscience and their best medical judgment. Biological men who believe they are women would be able to compete in women's sports at every level. It would even promote abortion by redefining sex to include pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical condition, which is another way to justify taxpayer of abortion. And it would allow parents who do not support their adolescent child's gender transition to lose custody because of their beliefs. That's what's in the Equality Act. And that's why it was right for those senators to object to it being passed unanimously. And this isn't just a poorly written piece of legislation. This is an intentional effort to undermine religious freedom and to impose a government-mandated sexual ideology that demands acceptance from everyone. This is an ideological battle, and there is a lot at stake with this issue and with the Equality Act. And Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma captured this well in his remarks, objecting to Democrat senators' attempt to pass the Equality Act by unanimous consent. And he stresses that there is a better way forward, and that this legislation is not the solution and will only lead to further division and more problems in our country. This is what he said. This is a piece of his remarks last week objecting to the Equality Act.
No person should be discriminated against in America. No one. It's a basic constitutional principle. We're all equal under the law. All of us. We have different ideas about music and food. We have different ideas about sexuality. We have different ideas about occupations. We have different skin colors. We are the tapestry that we talk about. And we are working to make a more perfect union. And I absolutely believe that no person should be discriminated against in America. The Equality Act doesn't just make everything equal, though. It has a great title. Who can oppose equality? No one. It's a basic principle of American values. We don't oppose equality, but we do oppose when through legislation you take the rights of one and dismiss the rights of others and say, your rights don't count, only this group counts, only this person counts. We in America have tried to work together in all of our differences for over two centuries to learn better how to be able to hear the rights of another one, to be able to accommodate, and to be able to find those spots where the rights collide of two individuals, and to be able to work it out among each other. The Equality Act does not do that. I wish it did. It changes things dramatically. Let me just give you a few examples. It reaches into high school sports and says for male and female sports that individuals, sexual orientation, gender identity, can move between those. There is no standard for testosterone. There is no standard for moving through transition, surgery. There is no standard at all set on it. It opens it up for any male, biological male, to step into female sports on the high school level or in the college level or in the pro athlete level and to be able to move into that sport. That grossly disadvantages girls in sports. But their rights are denied. We've already seen this in several states, where state record holders for track, for instance, or someone that was a biological male competing in women's athletics, denying the other girls that were competing in that from opportunities from scholarships to college, to be able to move on to other athletics. Their rights were ignored because these rights were prioritized. In adoptions, we need more adoption areas. We need more foster care in America, not less. The Equality Act says that if you're a faith-based adoption agency that only places children in the home where there's a mom and dad there, then you either have to change your faith or close. You have no other option. So the Equality Act says to that institution, I would rather have fewer adoption agencies in America than have you open. That's not protecting the rights of all Americans. That's not us learning how to accommodate together. Why can't we have adoption agencies that do adoptions in LGBT homes and some that do adoptions that don't? Why can't we have both? Why can't we accommodate both? The Equality Act does not allow that. Come on, let's work together. We don't want anyone to be discriminated against, anyone. But we can do this in a way that accommodates everyone and that we can actually work towards agreement. Or to say it in the words of J.K. Rowling this past week, where she wrote, "All I'm asking, all I want, is for similar empathy, similar understanding to be extended to the many millions of women whose sole crime is wanting their concerns to be heard without receiving threats or abuse." Let's work together to get equality. This bill does not do it in this form. Therefore, I object.
I think that is well said from Senator Lankford. And one of the key areas that he touched on in those remarks was the issue of of women's athletics. And I think it defies common sense what we're seeing take place across the country, where biological males are allowed to compete in women's sporting events and win and displace girls from podiums and from receiving medals and even scholarships. College sports are for college athletes. Professional sports are for pro athletes. And women's sports are for women, just like men's sports are for men. This is fundamentally an issue of fairness. But even beyond that, prior to 1972, female athletes had to fight for their own funding, for their own facility use, uniforms, private locker rooms, their own divisions, scholarships, and more. And that's why Congress passed Title IX nearly 50 years ago to ensure equal access to educational opportunities and athletics for women. And now we have this push for men who identify as women to compete in girls' sports. And we're seeing the same crowd that once called for equality and equal athletic opportunities for women now cheer gleefully when a biological male or like a mixed martial arts fighter literally beats a woman. And we're turning boys into girls' sports champions. And that is why there is a new nationwide movement launched by the Family Policy Alliance to save girls' sports. The campaign aims to give female athletes and their supporters a chance to play referee for a change and to declare that it's not fair that this hostile takeover of their athletic opportunities by political opportunists is wrong. The Save Girls Sports campaign is the chance for female athletes and supporters to join together to save Title IX and girls' sports. And it's a chance for all of us to stop the efforts. And it's a chance for all of us to stop the efforts to erase equal opportunity for women. For nearly 50 years, girls have benefited from Title IX and the athletic opportunities afforded to them. Surely these advancements shouldn't be washed away for girls today and future generations to come just to score a political point. Bottom line, women deserve the same opportunities as men to compete in sports. Biology matters, and recognition of this in the law isn't bigotry. It reflects true diversity and is based on science and common sense. To learn more about the Save Girls Sports campaign and to stay up to date on the latest news impacting family, freedom, and life, visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.